Senate candidates spar in their first debate, an allegation against Speaker Brian Bosma, that plus Kavanaugh on the court and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 12, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Democratic U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly and Republican challenger Mike Braun wasted no time in going on the attack in the first debate of this year's Senate race. The candidates sparred over health care, tax reform, and support for President Donald Trump.
Libertarian candidate Lucy Brenton said Republican Mike Braun and Democrat Joe Donnelly were merely repeating their campaign commercials. Early on, she wasn't wrong. Donnelly talked about his willingness to vote with President Trump and against his own party, and he attacked Braun as a rubber stamp for Trump, for example, on the Supreme Court.
If President Trump put up Bugs Bunny, Mike would have said he should go on the court.
Braun hit back plenty as he continued his effort to label Donnelly as someone who doesn't do what he promises.
Consider the least effective Democratic senator, because he never sticks his neck out. He blows with the wind.
And Brenton sought to carve out a path as the race's only true outsider.
This is really about the old parties, whether they wear a red jacket or a blue jacket, trying to force and make you do something that may not be in your own best interests.
Who came out the winner of the first debate? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Laura Beck, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, did Mike Braun land enough punches here?
I think he did, and I think the Braun campaign sent out an email saying they won the debate, so I think that settles it for all Hoosiers in this panel.
That's usually how we decide it.
The one takeaway I had from this was how the demeanor of Joe Donnelly has changed. He's been kind of nice guy Joe his whole career. He's tried to, he makes fun of the blue shirt, but he spent the whole campaign wearing his own blue shirt. So Mike Braun doesn't have the market cornered on that. So he's tried to create this image of himself, but he's voted against things that Hoosiers care a lot about. He was the deciding vote to preserve Obamacare. He voted against the Iran deal, tax reform, Kavanaugh. So the things that Hoosiers care most about, he's not with them on. And so what you could take away from it is nice guy Joe isn't working if you're still voting against Hoosiers' interests. And so he's got to change it up a little bit. He's got to get more aggressive. He's got to start getting negative against Mike Braun, and we're starting to see that down the stretch here.
Yeah, we did see a different side of Joe Donnelly, I think, than even some people were expecting. And he went after Braun right away and stayed on him the whole debate. Were you surprised by that?
No, I wasn't necessarily surprised by it. And I don't know if I'd say he was aggressive. I think I'd say he was more pugnacious in his approach. But he was... He is making the case to Hoosiers of why he should be hired again. And so he is not going to let Mike Braun's tired talking points, all of which Mike went through that can all be easily refuted, he is not going to let him get in an edge on that. And so what you're seeing is somebody who's a fighter, and he's going to stand up and he's going to say to him, look, you might... you want to say this, well, here's what I did on this. Here's what I did here. Here's what I did here. And so the whole way through, he had a very articulate and thoughtful, smart rebuttal for every single point that Mike Braun took him on. And I think that's what Hoosiers want when they elect somebody to go to Washington. They want him fighting for him. They don't want somebody who's walking around the halls and, in their blue shirt. No offense to blue-shirted people among us tonight.
Change perhaps or shift in strategy aside from Joe Donnelly perhaps, is this debate really going to matter in the final tally?
No. I mean, I think it's good for Hoosiers to hear from both candidates, and I certainly support all that, but debates don't really, unless you literally fall flat on your face or say something incredibly, controversial like Richard Murdoch did in the last Senate race, as long as you don't hurt yourself, you can't really help, you can't really win it, but you can definitely lose it in a debate.
Yeah, to that end, in a race this tight, that's been this tight, that's expected to stay this tight, is it a win for both of them in that neither one of them hurt themselves?
Well, you're right. That's what people are looking for, to see if anybody just
you put it very well, fall flat on your face, or, you know, put foot in mouth, or
insert whatever cliche you want to hear, and
Nikki cited the classic example in a U.S. Senate race involving, of course, Joe Donnelly. And many people would say that what delivered the race, the win ultimately to Joe Donnelly there, were some of the what many considered outrageous comments that his Republican opponent, Richard Murdoch, made in the campaign. And those comments, of course, became national headlines, not just Indiana headlines. So that's an example of what you don't want to do in a debate at this stage in the process. That's how you lose a debate as opposed to winning a debate. So at this point, everybody was aggressive, pugnacious. We'll adopt that as our word. But nobody embarrassed himself or herself. And I would just say, last observation is, maybe this is not a climate where nice Joe or Joanne is rewarded. It seems to me in Washington and in across the country right now, maybe it's because of how polarized our political, the electorate is right now, and just how much anxiety and pent-up frustration there is on both sides, that this Mr. Smith may go to Washington, but if Mr. Smith doesn't have daggers out and ready to go at it in a street-fighting way, he's not going to get reelected.
I would have watched that Jimmy Stewart movie.
That would be an interesting sequel, yes. That's
an Indy Star report this week says House Speaker Brian Bosma paid a law firm $40,000 this year in part to gather unflattering information about a former House Democratic intern who alleges she had a sexual encounter with Bosma in the early 90s. Candy Green says she had a sexual encounter with Brian Bosma in 1992, and she claims an attorney hired by Bosma this year harassed her friends and family in an effort to intimidate and discredit her. Bosma denies both accusations. Governor Eric Holcomb won't call for any investigation, and he says he won't comment without a, quote, official report of the allegations. Holcomb did call for an inspector general investigation into sexual misconduct allegations against Attorney General Curtis Hill earlier this year, but the IG has no authority over the legislature. That's the purview of the House Ethics Committee, and Democrats say Holcomb could have urged it to take up the issue.
Laura Beck, what, if any, fallout comes from this?
Well, I think it remains to be seen, but I think there will be fallout eventually from it. The challenge here with this is, and I work in PR, so I'll approach it from this perspective. It's not the crime that's the issue, it's the cover-up. And so...
And I should note...
There's no crime, right. This is something that essentially is alleged to have happened between two consenting adults 26, 25 years ago. I think where it becomes a story and where it becomes a challenge, particularly for the speaker, is that the engagement of a law firm and then the alleged intimidation tactics used against this woman to try and kill the story. So that is, I think, where really the issue becomes. And then you layer all of this in with, you've got Kavanaugh out there, and you've got a lot of women who are very unhappy about how that process went down. Then you also have Curtis Hill. And against that backdrop, everyone rushed out on the Republican side and said, you know, he's got to go, he's got to resign. But now you have a governor saying, oh, nope, I'm not going anywhere near this. And when that happens, it does make you think of the old adage that the most powerful person in the state house is the speaker, perhaps not some of these other folks. So it coming right before Election Day, the optics are not good, and I think it's probably going to continue as we move forward.
Yeah, in a way, did to the point about crime versus cover-up. And again,
right,
no crime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Was this sort of self-inflicted by Brian Bosma and the way he handled it in the last several months?
If it's not true, I think you want to take, and personally, I think it's a human kind of personal decision to go defend yourself and defend, you know, a life of public service is what Brian Bosma has in Indiana and his family has had in Indiana for a long time. So I think there's that instinct to defend yourself aggressively against what you feel is an unfair, unjust, or just untrue. Untrue attack. I mean, your question about fallout, I don't know what you mean if you just mean the speaker himself, but politically in the proximity of the election, I don't see voters going to the polls in Carroll County or Noble County.
My follow-up question is for Speaker Bosma himself. Is there any fallout for him from this?
It's hard to game plan these situations out too far in advance. You never could. I think the difference between this situation and Curtis Hill is, one, a criminal act has been alleged. A law firm investigated it. The alleged victims were all interviewed. There was documentation of all that. There was a report presented to the legislature as an employer about their employees and the lawmaker. Yep. There was a lot more background on the Curtis Hill situation, which is why I think Governor Holcomb was right to say, wait a minute, I'm 24 hours into a news cycle on something that I just heard about, so let's wait a minute. Instead of the Curtis Hill situation, where a week after that came out, he called for his resignation after all of this other supporting documentation had been provided.
Yeah, so, and that was the line that Holcomb used, which was, I'm not going to comment on just a story. This is, I want to see an official report. It takes a second to explain why this
is
different
from...
Yeah, and
right.
So there's
all
the problem.
All of these get put in the same bucket and are expected to be handled the same way.
Is that a problem for Eric Holcomb? That it does take a minute of explanation to explain why these two situations are different?
Potentially. And you're right. This is context is everything in this situation. If this had come up, say, before the Me Too movement and before all of the very high-profile allegations and the repercussions that followed in politics and media, every industry certainly has been touched. So I think when you're Brian Bosma, first of all, you react knowing that for many people, it doesn't really matter. You don't have to dissect, as you just took a few minutes to explain. An accusation in this climate may be pretty damaging, just this any kind of allegation or accusation. So I guess I understand why there was that need to respond. Probably not the most deft response, because again, it is different from some of the other scenarios that we've talked about, including Curtis Hill's the allegations surrounding him. So there is a difference. It probably in another time, in another era, might have gone away.
Yeah.
But because of the atmosphere in which we operate now, I think the calculations are all different. And therefore, it does take much more explanation and much more appreciation of nuance so that everybody's not painted with, forgive the cliche, the same very broad brush.
We talked about Curtis Hill in that situation for 6 straight weeks on this show. And we probably will, yeah, six straight yeah, I counted 6 straight weeks, and we probably will end up talking about it again here in the next several weeks. Are we going to spend much more time talking about this one?
I mean, I think it all depends what happens. I mean, it kind of depends if other people come out and have other accusations. It depends if that, you know, breeds any of that.
Yeah.
Certainly, journalistically, the speaker gave them the opening to write the story. I mean, before they had basically an allegation of infidelity.
Yeah.
25 years ago. That was not a story. But by using campaign funds, making them trackable, hiring a bulldog of an attorney, and everyone knows that Linda Pence is, you know, he just opened himself up for it.
Can I say one other thing, too, just about your point on Me Too? It's hit me a couple times, especially in the context of this story, that had this happened and those tactics that they used 5 years ago, this woman may not have felt comfortable coming forward and even telling the Star to use her name. So
yeah, it was only after the attorney was hired.
Yeah, and I think that Me Too has actually really opened up the door for people to say, wait a minute, I'm gonna take ownership of my name. I'm gonna take ownership of what happened to me rather than you tell me what to do.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will there be any fallout for Speaker Brian Bosma from allegations of intimidation and adultery in an Indy Star report? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, should Secretary of State office holders and candidates be barred from accepting campaign contributions from auto dealers who the office oversees? 88% say yes, and 12% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, the U.S. Senate this week confirmed President Trump nominee Brett Kavanaugh as the newest member of the United States Supreme Court.
The vote was narrow, 50-49, with one Democrat, West Virginia's Joe Manchin, joining Republicans to confirm Kavanaugh. Controversy swirled over the nomination in recent weeks as multiple women accused Kavanaugh of sexual assault, dating back to his time in high school and college. U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly voted no and cited concerns about Kavanaugh's impartiality and temperament. Donnelly's Republican challenger, Mike Braun, sharply criticized Donnelly's decision, saying he betrayed Hoosiers.
John Schwanes, does it actually help Donnelly that Kavanaugh was indeed confirmed, meaning his no vote didn't ultimately affect the outcome?
To the extent that we want to delve into, I don't know how big an issue this is in terms of changing voters' minds, but I'll take your question as posed, and we'll dig into it. I think, yeah, if you had to have a scenario, this probably was as good as you could get for him, because his opponents effectively got what they wanted in the end, so there's maybe a pressure valve that's been turned a little bit. There's certainly there has been excitement around the country, but we don't have right. And when you win something, it's hard to stay as motivated and as angry when you're celebrating and popping the champagne corks. So
President Trump would belie that, I think.
Well, but for the average person,
yes.
So I think you've let the pressure out there. Had he voted no, by the same token, his base, the people who are also frustrated now and didn't win this battle, lost the battle, people who were wanting to see Brett Kavanaugh withdraw or rejected, they still are motivated. And in a way that now they can take out their anger by supporting the quest to gain control in the Senate on behalf of Democratic candidates, in a way that if Joe Donnelly... I don't think they would have switched their votes. This is not a candidate switching kind of factor.
It's energizing.
It's yeah. motivation. It's get out the vote. And his people
sides.
To that extent.
On both sides, yeah. Right. As it turns out,
but
on both sides.
It probably plays better for him the way it turned out.
To that end, though, if there are some voters right there in the middle that maybe are trying to make up their minds between these two guys and don't love that Joe Donnelly maybe voted no, but Joe Donnelly's explanation as we got it afterwards was impartiality and judicial temperament.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that John's right. In the circumstance in which a Republican or conservative was obviously going on the court, this is the best way it could have happened for him, because he could say, look, even if I don't think he did anything, he clearly mm-hmm. showed that he cannot control his temperament, you know, I mean, just watching him answer those questions and react and be so volatile with the mm-hmm. with the congressman was enough.
We refer to that here as pugnacious,
yes.
by the way.
It's pugnacious. Was yes. enough for him to easily, you know,
you
get through it without much scathing.
This has clearly energized conservative voters across the country, probably here in Indiana too. And helped shrink that enthusiasm gap that we've been talking about that's favored Democrats for months and months and months. Will it stay that close 4 weeks from now?
You know, it's so hard to forecast because so many things can happen. Who knows what Donald Trump's going to do in the next 4 weeks, too. That also is a motivating factor, I think, for Democrats is that as well. Senator Donnelly had a very solid explanation, and I think the judicial temperament and the impartiality was a key piece of it. The challenge is that Brett Kavanaugh is now seen as fiercely partisan. I mean, it'd be like appointing, you know, me or you to the Supreme Court. I mean, all they'd have to do is go out and take, I would never be on the Supreme Court, but you know what I mean. You could just go take reams and reams and reams of things that we've said over the years. So here is this fiercely partisan person. And so every time a decision comes down and he's the deciding factor, that's what people are going to think of. And it's really hard to erase him aggressively and nastily challenging Amy Klobuchar, who had an alcoholic father about her drinking. I mean, this is the person who is on the Supreme Court now. And I really believe that there are people who just are not comfortable with somebody like that serving in a position where you are deciding generational norms for our society.
Did ultimately the Brett Kavanaugh situation, regardless almost of how Joe Donnelly voted, did it ultimately prove a win for Republicans because of the energizing factor?
I think so. I think it's a start. We talked about this before. We saw polling prior to all this when it was just Democrats who care deeply about there not being another conservative on the Supreme Court and conservatives who care deeply about there being a conservative majority on the court who are very engaged in this and invested
yeah.
in it. You've got people that didn't care at all about judicial outcomes who now care about this mm-hmm. On both sides. And I don't know, we'll find out where the advantage came from, but you've got Republicans engaged now who are like, this was a bunch, you know, this was a sham of a process, and you've got Democrats who now think you have this guy who committed this act on, mm-hmm. on the Supreme Court, and that's wrong. We'll find out in the end what that means.
Yeah.
I think for the easiest way to explain this, it's not. There was a vote swap, and Manchin was able to vote yes in a red state. Now he's safe. It's hard to explain three dimensions deep that kind of decision. It's one dimensional. Joe Donnelly voted no. If a majority of Hoosiers wanted him to vote yes and vote with the president because the president's still popular here, then he's going to suffer the consequences for that election.
But in terms of his rationale, he is in good company. Look at the American Bar Association.
Yeah.
This is which came out and said you have a judge who's
highly
recommended.
Yeah, but again, what is the average Hoosier is checking with the ABA?
And you even have the Jesuit, the magazine of American, Jesuits. But the point was they weren't talking about the allegations, they were talking about temperament. So,
exactly.
So Joe Donnelly's not alone in saying that temperament.
That was his best answer. That's the best.
Okay, it happens to be the best. It does happen to be the best. But he's not alone in saying
it.
A convenient answer for him to be able to give to justify it.
Look, 2 weeks ago, or last week, I can't remember, the question was...
They all blur together after
a while. I know, they all started blurring together. But had he voted yes, the analysis would be, can Mike Braun even win here anymore? That would be the analysis.
I think if he had voted yes, the debate would have been, are Democrats going to abandon
Joe Donnelly? On the top four or five issues that we're talking about this election, Joe Donnelly's against Hoosiers on all of them.
You need some supporters to go to the polls, and if you honk them off that much,
And you're using the talking points of the top five issues. We can easily flip those and certainly give Joe Donnelly's a piece on that.
Well, I'm sure he has an opinion on why he voted for Obamacare and why he voted against tax.
Well, we're talking about pre-existing conditions. I mean, we can talk about pre-existing conditions all day long.
We can talk about the one most popular thing in a gigantic
healthcare program. It's not the most popular. As someone who has a pre-existing condition, it's pretty important to me. I can show you my recent healthcare bill where I pay out of pocket for all of these pieces to keep me moving.
All right, a decade.
Sorry to take over your show
fine.
Here.
A decades-long debate over whether Indiana should have an explicit hate crimes law is no closer to a resolution, as a committee assigned to study the issue did not deliver a recommendation this week. The study committee took hours of testimony. It largely mirrored the hours of testimony heard in each of the last three sessions when lawmakers debated a hate crimes bill. Committee Chair Republican Representative Tom Washburn says he's not comfortable with the panel making any recommendation. But Democratic Representative Matt Pierce says the committee shouldn't pass the buck. Governor Eric Holcomb earlier this year announced he'll support an effort to pass a hate crimes law in the upcoming 2019 legislative session. That session begins in January. Nikki Kelly, Speaker Bosma, earlier this year, when they released the study committee assignments, questioned the purpose of a study committee on this issue, seeing the committee's action or lack thereof. Does Bosma have a point, or did he?
Well, I mean, it's kind of not a fair question. The fact is, if legislative leaders wanted a recommendation out of that committee, they would get a recommendation out of that committee, just like they did on the alcohol committee, which also has lay members on it. I mean, the fact is that no one wanted to go on the record voting about that hate crimes law a couple weeks before an election.
It's probably like a prosecutor with a grand jury indictment. They say, there's no mystery. If a prosecutor wants to see an indictment, he or she can basically elicit from a grand jury that vote. And I think that's a pretty apt comparison in this situation. So it's a tough issue. It took 5 or 10 minutes to explain a few questions back?
Yeah.
What the hate crimes bill would and wouldn't do takes twice that long.
A lot longer than that.
Yeah. So.
At the end of the day, though, does this keep the conversation going enough that you see it resurrected once again in 2019 in a significant... I mean, there's always going to be these bills written.
Yeah.
But actually keep that debate alive?
There's really two ways to lose an issue in the State House. One is just on the issue up and down itself. The second is on the process. You just kind of... If it doesn't stay in front of them, on a big issue like hate crimes that's politically charged and there's some debate on its usefulness... It's really easy if it's not talked about all summer for legislators to go, well, we haven't talked about it in 2 years. We haven't talked about it in a year. So we don't need to bring it. There is value from a process standpoint of keeping it at the forefront, even if you don't resolve the question itself in the interim.
In that sense, was this a worthwhile 7 hours of a committee that I sat entirely through?
Well, I know what your personal time notwithstanding. I think any time we're talking about discrimination and the effects of it is really important because... just because it hasn't happened to us doesn't mean it's not happening to somebody else. And you had a lot of diverse voices that were up there that were testifying on that piece. What's disappointing is that It's clearly something that Hoosiers favor. It's clearly something where you have broad-based support for it from a number of coalitions. And yet it can't seem to get traction in the State House, despite the fact that even the governor is talking about why we need to have something like this. So we've really got to do something. We've got to do it soon.
I want to ask one quick follow-up to that, to you, which is David Long, at the when this fizzled out last session, said, I'm going to be the one who keeps it alive. Will Broadbrey do the same thing?
We don't know yet. Yeah. We have seen very little from him yet.
Yeah. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Lara Beck, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.